Okay. We're going to start with the very last question today on Chapter 8, because we mentioned this last week about how long has it been since the Feast of Tabernacles has been observed. And the verse says, since the days of Joshua, the son of Nun, until that day, the children of Israel had not done so. But I found verses in 2 Chronicles 8 where it was mentioned in Solomon's time, and then in Ezra 3 it's mentioned. So Stephen and I were visiting about it a little bit yesterday. I think he mentioned this too, that he believes that it was not celebrated in this way. In other words, I guess all out, whole, everybody taking part. So because I don't think we can say it's been 1,000 years since they've done it at all, because it has been mentioned more than once. Anybody have any comments on that? All right, well, let's start chapter 9. Let's read verse 1 through 3. On the 24th day of this month, the children of Israel will be assembled with fasting, in sackcloth, and with dust on their heads. Then those of Israelite lineage separated themselves from all foreigners, and they stood and confessed their sins and the iniquities of their fathers. They stood up in their place and read from the book of the law of the Lord their God for one fourth of the day, and for another fourth they confessed and worshiped the Lord their God. So it says here that they separated themselves from all foreigners. Let's look at Leviticus chapter 20. Amanda, will you read verse 26, please? Leviticus 20, verse 26.
Thus you are to be holy to me, for I am the Lord and holy, and I have set you apart from the peoples to be mine.
Okay, so why did he tell them to be separated? Mine says separated you from the peoples, set you apart. Why did he do that? Why did God do that?
Be a special people for him.
There's mention all throughout the Old Testament about him setting these people apart because they are his special people. Over and over and over, he blesses them. He makes covenants with them. He makes promises that he keeps. But all he expects in return is that they love him and serve him with all their heart, soul, and mind. In Ezra chapter 6, verse 21, it says, the children of Israel who had returned from the captivity ate together with all who had separated themselves from the filth of the nations of the land in order to seek the Lord God of Israel. So it's a recurring theme that once they get themselves all intermixed with these people, whether married or, you know, just all living together or what, repeatedly they have to separate themselves because that's God's plan from the beginning. And we're all familiar with Ezra 9 and 10, where they even had to break up their marriages and send their wives, foreign wives and children away. So, the last one, Ezra 6:21.
Okay.
So, are we commanded to separate ourselves today from foreigners? Or, let's see how this put it. Ezra 6:21. Well, this says the filth of the nations. In other words, anybody that's not a Jew or a Hebrew. Are we commanded to do that today?
You mean Christians staying away from non-Christians?
Mm-hmm.
No, we're in the world.
No.
But not of the world.
Right. 1 Corinthians 5, it makes that very clear. We can't get out of the world. We have to live in the world. But let's look at 1 verse 5. Pat, will you read that and then 2, 9, and 10?
1, 5.
Mm-hmm.
Who are protected by the power of God through faith for a salvation ready to be revealed in the last time.
Yes.
But you are a chosen race, a royal priesthood, a holy nation, a people of God's own possession, so that you may proclaim the excellencies of him who has called you out of darkness into his marvelous light. For you once were not a people, but now you are the people of God. You had not received mercy, but now you have received mercy.
Okay, so we are called a chosen generation, a royal priesthood, a holy nation. So there is a little bit of a parallel in that we are God's elect. We are heirs of his salvation. But as we just mentioned in 1 Corinthians 5, that's not any command to completely stay out of the world. But how can we... Go ahead.
Well, you know, in connection to that, in 2 Corinthians, Paul is talking to the Corinthians, and in 2 Corinthians, the 6th chapter, at the end, it talks about what harmony has Christ with Belial, or what has a believer in common with an unbeliever. What agreement has the temple of God with idols, thus being the temple of God? For we are the temple of the living God, just as God said, I will dwell in them and walk among them, and I will be their God, and they shall be my people. Therefore, come out from their midst and be separate, and do not touch that what is unclean, and I will welcome you, and I will be a father to you, and you shall be your sons and daughters to me, says the Lord Almighty. And he's talking to the Corinthians about taking part in the idolatrous temple, and he deals with eating the meat from the temple, not participating in the deeds, of the people that they are coming out of. Yes, we live in the world, but to be separate, to be different, not to have things in common with, is a very, good lesson for us to learn from the new Christians, in the first century that were coming out of idolatry. Going back and talking about these verses and everything, he's quoting, talking about physical Israel, the same as we're talking about. You know, be separate, separate yourselves because of the God you serve. They're serving these gods, and to have covenants with, and have things in common with, and to associate with in that close relationship that they were doing in Indian marriage and everything, was detrimental to their faith and to the God they serve.
Correct. We're going to discuss this more on chapter 10. I have quite a few notes there, but on that question that says, why do the people separate themselves from the peoples of the lands? And so I'm sure y'all have more information when we get to that. But my point, what I was going to cover here was, what Linda's saying is, what in the world do we have in common with people of the world? Yes, we have to live here. Yes, they're here. But if we make them our everyday and closest companions, what's going to happen to us?
We're going to fall away.
We're going to fall away. We're going to lose our faith. We're going to draw closer to that aspect of humanity where, just like 1 Corinthians 15:33 says, evil companionships corrupt good morals. So we need to avoid as much as we can. So what does that mean literally as far as our everyday activity that we can do to make ourselves a separate holy people? What can we do to avoid worldliness and the people of the world, the filth of the nations?
We need to associate with other Christians.
Yes, we do. What else?
Read the book of the law. This is where they started.
Right. We need to be grounded. We need to know what is right and what is wrong and what to not be around. But what about the places we go? I'm sure we all hang out at nightclubs every weekend. No. We generally don't go places where there's a lot of worldliness. Now, obviously, we can't avoid it. You go in a restaurant and the people at the next table are drinking beer or wine. There's not much we can do about that. But the kind of people who could influence us to the point of pulling us away from God is the kind of people that we want to avoid on a regular basis, for sure. Sometimes that's our next-door neighbor. Sometimes that's somebody you work with. And sometimes it's a family member. We just have to always be on guard to watch out for the forces that are trying to pull us away from God. Okay, and like I said, we're going to talk about this some more in chapter 10. Does anybody else have a comment they want to make on this? Actually, that wasn't even in your lesson, but that was kind of a prelude. Okay. After the feast ended, a period of fasting began, and this chapter is a prayer, a national prayer. It lists some people. Oops, let me get back in Nehemiah. It lists the people who are standing on the stairs of the Levites, crying out with a loud voice to the Lord their God. And they say, stand up and bless the Lord your God forever and ever. Blessed be your glorious name, which is exalted above all blessing and praise. So they just start out with praise and honoring God. And it says up here in verse 3, they're standing up in their place, listening to the book being read. So I don't know if they're standing up during this prayer or not. I think it's logical to assume they are, but we don't know that for sure. But anyway, it's a mark of respect, and at least they're listening. We know they're listening because of the way they've been behaving the rest of the book. So We've got praise, and then we've got some confession of sin and some historical retelling. So the way I organize this, and this may have been a totally wrong way to do this, because when I was studying it, I don't know if y'all were able to follow my thought processes, but what I was wanting to do was to look at the praise part first. What are some of the phrases that describe God as they use in this prayer? I already mentioned one, verse 5.
Creator.
Okay. Anybody else?
I'm the Lord.
You alone are the Lord. The Lord, the capital L-O-R-D, the Jehovah name. Anybody else?
You're righteous.
Mm-hmm. What does verse 17 have? Several phrases.
Mm-hmm. God of forgiveness, gracious, compassionate, slow to anger, abounding in kindness.
Right. Those cover a lot of territory, all of those. And, if we think about God having all those qualities, and I told somebody yesterday that I've done something in my life because I didn't want to face God and say I didn't do it. And that is an element of fear, which is basically reverence or awe. But, it's sometimes hard for me to remember these things about God. And I think that's one reason it's so good to study the Old Testament, because of how many times he forgave these people, how good he was to them, how much he gave them over and over and over and over. And they were awful. How long did they ever maintain their obedience to God? Ever. It was never a very long period of time, ever. So, this is just awe-inspiring to me, that God is so ready to pardon. And it really gives me hope that, I might have a chance of salvation because, He knows my heart, and he knows that I'm trying even though I fail and fail and fail. Okay, what about abundant mercies is mentioned again in 27. Yes, it does. Yes.
Also in verse 19, when he talked about his great confession, he did not forsake them where they went. He was faithful. And then also in verse 32, it says, who keeps covenant and loving kindness, he's mighty and awesome. And in verse 33, he's just and he dealt faithfully.
Right.
So these are descriptive things to me that gives me hope, because he is just, but he's very merciful and compassionate, and it's all rolled into one. And it's amazing, he can look at the heart. And some of these, he looked at their heart and he knew they weren't right, but he had made promises to somebody else. And so he kept his covenant. He kept the promises he made to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, and David. And that was always in his mind to bring about Jesus.
You mentioned in verse 19, he did not forsake them in the wilderness. What were they doing in the wilderness? Were they on good terms with him at that point? They were being punished for 40 years. But he was with them that entire time. He was still, their God. He cared for them. He made sure they had clothes. He made sure their shoes didn't wear out. They had food. He took care of them. He was always there for them, even in their lowest times.
So the works and wonders he did, and some of those things you mentioned.
Yeah, I put that under that too, stupid.
Over and over and over.
Yes.
And so on. I didn't know how you wanted to divide this, so I tried to pick the things.
Well, I did too. I obviously, they're going to blend over into each other.
But some of them could have gone either place.
Right. That's okay. We're going to discuss that one too. But I just want to say that I put a summary at the bottom of this question. After the things I listed, the emphasis is on the greatness of God. And his all powerful nature and his mightiness and his great, great love and mercy. Everything about him is just great and awesome. So that's how I summarized all of that. I didn't ask y'all to do that. That's kind of a note I made. Okay, so let's move on.
Verse 10. All knowing. He says, thou dost know. We're talking about the character of God and his descriptions. He's all knowing. And we're talking about it all caring. But he knows everything. And I started out here, although it's not quoted for the words, but he is worthy of worship. And he is the lawgiver. And he is the one who has the right to to be the lawgiver and to command, and because of who he is.
Right.
And so, and he didn't leave his people, or the world for that matter, without, you know, right words from him. You know, yeah, he gave law and he gave the prophets time and time again. You know, and so, you know, this is this awesome and mighty God who has the right to do that.
I put down verse 5, actually, where they say, stand up and bless the Lord your God forever and ever. Blessed be your glorious name, which is exalted. His name is exalted because he is the only God. He is the only Lord. You alone are Lord. And, I mean, and that just encompasses everything because his name is great and mighty. Okay, so how about some things about his works and wonders? Just things he did.
He's the creator in verse 6.
Yes. Yes, absolutely. I put it that he has made, my Bible doesn't say creator, it says he's made the heaven, its host, and everything in it. Oh, by the way, I forgot to mention too, I wanted to say in verse 6 that the host of heaven worships him. Not just us, but that, you know, the angels and the inhabitants of heaven as well. Okay, so he is the creator. He is the beginning of everything. He made all we see, made us, everything in the earth. What else?
Verse 7 and 8, he chose Abraham and made covenant to give the land to his
descendants.
Yes, I had that one too.
And he also fulfilled it.
You know, he did what?
He fulfilled it in verse
yes.
8.
Yes.
So sometimes, you know, they have all kinds of people who promise it. And, you know, does it come to pass? You know, just as you say, and not the next day. You know, it was a while.
This is why we have this, so we know that it was fulfilled, that it came to pass. I have in 11 and 12 the signs and wonders when he was bringing the Israelites out of Egypt. He parted the sea, threw the persecutors into the deep, and then how did he lead them through the wilderness? The cloud and the pillar of fire. What did he do on Mount Sinai?
Well, I'm pretty spoke to them. The time that I took that is when he came down and talked, and they said, Moses, we don't want to hear this anymore. The people actually heard his voice, and they didn't like it. They said, Moses, you go talk to God from now on. And that's how I took. And also, he gave the law.
So, it says it gave them just ordinances and true laws.
Yeah, I know. Right? I think the
You think it's talking about when he spoke to the people?
I think it was both. I think
okay.
That's the way I interpreted that. Now that could be. Not wrong, but anyway, as I read.
Well, it came down on Mount Sinai and gave him laws, you know.
He gave that to Moses, but they heard him. He came down the first time, and remember, they couldn't touch the mountain and all that, and then they didn't want any more of that. They were so afraid of him.
The words give and gave appear in this chapter 15 or 16 times. What else did he give them? Yes, he did. He made sure they were taken care of. And they griped and moaned and complained about it, didn't they? As usual. And then what I said a while ago, they lacked nothing. Their clothes weren't worn out. Their feet were unswollen. Connected to giving them food and water, he sustained them 40 years in the wilderness, according to verse 21. I mean, there may have been a little more to that. Did they have animals wandering around the wilderness?
Oh, yeah, they took took everything with them.
But they weren't eating their animals.
No.
Okay. So the animals obviously were living all this time too. But they had to care for these animals. They had to feed the animals. And I doubt there's a whole lot of wheat fields or corn fields growing out there in the wilderness. Mm-hmm. So he took care of everything for them.
If their feet didn't swell and all that walking they did, those animals could do without eating. If God so.
Well, this is true. I hadn't thought of that.
So there are so many things that is encompassed in this that we can't comprehend, and we don't know.
What yeah, for thousands of people. We're not talking
well, and no,
hundred
thousands
people.
I think at one point, I heard say that it was like a million people when they first left. It would have been close to a million people when they first left, and now we know it's over 600,000 when before they sinned, men, 600,000 men able to go 21 years older, so that's a lot of people.
That is a lot of people. That's a good sized bunch of people. All right, what? I'm sorry?
I mean, you think about doing this for 40 years, and that wasn't God's plan. God's plan was not for them to be in the wilderness for 40 years. They should have been there within a very short period of time.
Yeah, that was a side trip, wasn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Kind of a long one. In verse 20, what did he do?
Lauren,
ma'am.
Did you talk about, I think in verse 16 and 17, there's a phrase that says ready to pardon, and that, I think that's talking about God is just abounding in forgiveness.
Where is ready to pardon? In 17? We did talk about that. That's okay. And we're going to get to the first part of verse 16 down here when under the sinfulness of the fathers. Okay, so what's in verse 20?
Gave him his spirit to instruct them.
Yeah, how did he do that anyway? Steve talked about this Sunday. Yes, verse 30. Tells us exactly how he did it. Testified against them by your spirit and your prophets. He didn't send little mumbo-jumbo things. He sent prophets just like he did throughout the Old Testament. And then in verse... what are some other things y'all have? I have several more. Some more things he gave them. It's like when they went into the land.
Well, the land of Sinai and all are mentioned specifically. He gave them all the land.
Right.
They got fortified cities. And
kingdoms and nations. And
houses full of good things. Cisterns and... You
know,
they
already established.
These houses, they didn't plant these vineyards. Everything was already there. They just had to walk in and take over.
Right. Verse 24 says he brought them into the land and subdued before them the inhabitants. There weren't enough of them to defeat all the people in this land without God. They could not have done it without God. So, and obviously, you know, when the whole Jericho thing, marching around the wall and going to make it, and walls fall down without God making that happen. So, what do you do with their children? Verse 23.
He made them a great nation, like
the stars. Right. Multiplied them as the stars of heaven, like we were talking about a while ago. They left Egypt with a certain amount of people, and yes, during the wandering, all those males, 20 and up, died. The babies were coming along and growing up. 40 years. So they had warriors, they had fighting men to go in and claim the nation, or claim the land. Verse 27, 28 says he gave them deliverance from the hand of their enemies many times, and also that he heard from heaven when they were oppressed, when they were in the hands of their enemies, which he made happen because of their sin, and in the time of their trouble when they cried to you, you heard from heaven. You know, time after time, as we said a while ago, they messed up. He sent punishment, but he never went away because he heard them when they what's the word that starts with an S?
Supplication.
When they offered supplication. Okay. And then in verse 30 on the prophets thing again, it says before about that he had many years, patience for many years, and sent prophets to instruct them, as it said in verse 20. And to warn them and, you know, to get them back on the right path when they got off and that kind of thing. The whole chapter, the whole prayer is about all the wonderful things he did because he is so wonderful and good. You know, he said give and gave over and over and over the things he gave them and the things he did for them. Did anybody else want to comment on this before we move on?
Well, 36 and 37, he started follow-ups about what he did, you know, in the land at the time of the judges. But, they were slaves in the land, you know, until they go back, you know, to return because of their evil deeds. And so, you know, he does punish, but because he loves them so much to bring them to repentance, you know. And so, you know, it deals with the nation that come and got them.
Exactly.
And then how actually they were taken care of and that kind of thing, you know,
then
now they've been
bought.
Yes.
Okay. I'll put verse 23 again on this one because he dealt faithfully. He was just and dealt faithfully. To me, that's a wonderful act of God that we, you know, somebody does us wrong once and we get perturbed and we may get over it. And the second time we kind of takes a little longer and we finally get over it. But after about the fourth or fifth time, I'm sorry, but I'm, you know, I've done all I can do. What else can I do to help you? You spit in my face every time I turn around. But God's not that way. He just keeps on. He's just, but he's going to be faithful. And I see it as, like I said before, he made these promises and he was going to be faithful and this is what he chose and he was working with what he had. And
well, he means what he says. This is what he expects from us. And if we fall down on our side of the bargain, then something's going to happen. But as we see here and over, he's always there waiting to forgive us, waiting to take us back.
Another thing I see is sometimes the majority is with the remnant. There's a few people that, just like here in Ezra and Nehemiah, they're wanting to help these people. I mean, they can't get it right. They keep marrying these foreign women, but they keep, there's still that faithful remnant. And sometimes it's people that, people don't know what they're doing. They do, you do in the case of Ezra and Nehemiah. But so many times I think God spares this nation because of the few righteous people comparatively that are few. And so he's going to deal faithfully. He remembers us and he has to care of us in ways we don't have any knowledge of or he doesn't tell us.
All right. Okay. Anybody else?
You know, there's come a time though in Israel's history where they were taken away from Syria that God said, I had enough.
Yes, but they came back.
Israel. Judah.
Oh, okay, Judah.
Judah, he's saved.
Yeah, Israel's gone.
He brought back a remnant. But Israel...
It just shrinks down and shrinks down to fewer and fewer people, doesn't it?
Yeah.
And that kind of goes with what Pat was saying about there's always a remnant. There's not a... relatively speaking, the righteous people in our country, I think, are way outnumbered by the unrighteous. But
evidently, there were even still in Israel that came back to Judah and lived. Some of the readings, and some of my reading the other day, when I don't remember exactly where it was, but it talked about some of the ones who did come and gave other nations, and when they were dividing the land or something, there were still a few, not enough to save the whole nation. But those left and were still evidently trying to serve God. And even the tribe of Levi, there were enough in the tribe of Levi to keep the lineage pure. And they were scattered throughout, and it may have been mostly the Levites or the people who were of that tribe that were in other tribes. But they were able to keep that lineage pure to bring about the having a high priest. Because even here, when they came back, they couldn't bring the lineage. You couldn't serve as a priest.
So do you think that the tribes intermarried?
Yeah, there's nothing wrong with them.
As long as there was a straight line down of at least one.
Well, the thing is, if a woman inherited the land, you know, there was a woman who came to know, to Moses and said, hey, our father's dead.
And no brothers.
Why should his name die out? And as long as they married within that tribe,
they could
keep their land. If they married outside the tribe, they weren't condemned for that. They just could not take that land and transfer
to that tribe.
It had to fall to another male in that tribe.
Okay. Any other comments? All right, let's talk about the sinfulness of the fathers. A lot about this in here. Verse 16. They acted proudly and hardened their necks and did not heed your commandments. That about sums it up, doesn't it? There's some more descriptive words. In fact, verse 17 says they refused to obey. They weren't mindful of your wonders. They just ignored God. I don't know. I don't know if they got affluent and decided they didn't need him and just went on their own way or got scared, as in the case of, Moses was on Mount Sinai getting the law and they got tired of waiting on him or nervous or something, so they just decided they'd do their own thing and make a molded calf. Who knows what their thinking was there. What else?
I put verse 2. I only confess, and I put that down on the next one. But they were very sinful. Their father, it's a very sinful nation. They confessed. They stood and confessed the sins and the iniquities of their fathers. So this was a sinful bunch of people. Okay, and had been for evidently a very long time.
Wild men. Okay, that's a good point. I didn't even go back that far. I started with the prayer. Yes.
Do you think
I think it could be, or either they're I guess that if they're not thankful, there it'd be the same thing as ignoring them and acting like they didn't happen. But that's a good point. I hadn't thought of that. They're not grateful. Not remembering where their living comes from and where their all the gifts that they have.
You know, so many people, in 1 Corinthians, Paul deals with people who do not take the Lord's Supper in a right manner, with a right heart. And it goes back to remembering the Lord's death with a right heart. And some of them sleep, and some of them even, you know, fall away. It's because they don't remember, you know, the Lord instituted that instead of remembering for a very good reason, to keep our minds focused, to keep our thoughts on just how much He did love us and what we owe Him. And these people had not remembered any of that.
Yeah.
So,
but what? How is it that somebody cannot remember something? What causes that to happen?
Take it for granted. Stubborn heart.
Yes, but I mean, I'm talking about future.
They don't continue to read
and teach their children.
Yeah.
Right. They neglect to pass it down. Obviously, the word's there. You know, we all have the word. But if you say you grew up in a family that never goes to church or never has a Bible, do you have any idea what's in it? You know, you're not taught. And in this, back in that day, I guess they did have written, especially after Moses wrote down what he wrote down, because they had the law, they're reading it right here. But obviously they hadn't heard it in a while. So somebody, it's somewhere along the line, had neglected to teach their children or to pass it down or to teach the people. It could be on the part of the Levites. Yes.
Could this be, not that they didn't remember what happened, but remember so as to act upon it. Not just, they didn't, that I don't know that the people ever forgot. I mean, the stories were handed down about the plagues and all that kind of thing, I would think. But I wonder, because if this could be parallelism, they refused to listen and did not remember.
So that's true.
Is it this, not they, we know something. Some things we know. We know we shouldn't do. A diabetic knows they should not eat certain things. It's not that they don't remember that. It's they don't act on that.
Good point.
And so, remember to listen.
Well, would that kind of follow along with, and you might have mentioned it, in the 16, where it says that they, our fathers, acted arrogantly. I don't know if there's...
Yeah, mine's just proudly.
Proudly. Arrogance.
Yeah, I think we... People of all generations and all ages, all through time, have, you know, when you're affluent, when you have plenty to eat and plenty to, you know, your health, everybody's healthy, everybody's doing fine, we do tend to forget God, even though we know what God has done. I think we come to think that I'm doing pretty good. You know, do I need God? You know, what can He do for me that's any better than this? We can't see the big picture. We can't see the long term, which is, if we don't remember Him in this life, then where are we going to be in the next life? So, she's grinning. and also, I think that goes along with being ungrateful, like Sandra was talking about. You know, if we're not grateful, we're not going to remember and we're not going to act on it. We have to remember who God is and who we are in relation to God.
There's a lot of people who claim to know God. I believe there's a God. But they don't remember Him to do what He said.
Right.
They know who He is, but don't do what He
Well, their God said. Wants them to be happy.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
So they do what they want.
Well, that's true. Mm-hmm. But I told someone not too long ago, if that's what you want, if happiness is all you're seeking, you better get it here, because the way you're living, you're not going to have any. You're going to think this is a cakewalk or a picnic for the next life, because He's not going to be happy there. You can't want things in His face anymore.
I thought it was interesting in verse 34 that it mentions that neither kings, princes, priests, nor fathers have kept the laws, nor heeded the commandments. It wasn't a select group of people. It wasn't just the Levites that fell down on the job. We had leaders and priests and everybody that was not doing what they should have been doing. And then in 35, they have not served you in your kingdom, or in the many good things that you gave them, or in the large and rich land which you set before them, nor did they turn from their wicked works. They just, I mean, it's mind-boggling to me that they are given this land just handed to them on a platter. I mean, they hardly had to do anything to take it. And instead of being grateful and, you know, being done with the whole wandering in the wilderness thing, it's just no time before they're back living wickedly. And forgetting God and doing their own thing.
Do we mention in verse 26 they killed prophets?
Yeah.
I had that down. I don't think we mentioned that. Yeah, that'll never help anything if you're killing the prophets. They're killing them, I guess, because they don't like what they're saying.
Yeah, well, here again, it's not that they don't care and don't know. They don't want to do it.
They don't want to do it. Disobedient and rebellious is in that same verse.
Yes, and so that we can do that today. We don't have prophets coming to us today to kill us, but we can close this book and never open it and not care one thing about what it says. And in a sense, we've killed the words, their words. We're not using them. And our nation, you know, a lot of nations don't have the privilege we do. We have a Bible. You can buy a Bible anywhere. Walmart, mm-hmm. just about any store you go in. I mean, it may not be a real good translation, but but even a good translation, the King James, which is still a good translation, harder to read, but they're pretty much everywhere. And the New King James also is a lot more readily available. So we have it. We have his prophet's words. But we don't physically kill them, but we kill them in our hearts.
Right. You know, this section, if you put it in contrast with the one before, to me, that illustrates the grace of God, because he, you know, all of this over and over and over talks about their not turning from their wicked works, not serving him, doing wickedness, stiffen their necks, acted proudly, disobedient. But over and over again, as we were talking a while ago, God forgives them and starts giving them stuff again. Over and over and over. Here they are coming back from 70 years of captivity, and he's helping them build the wall in 52 days, and they're about to move into their new city, and, you know, I'm sure he's going to continue to bless them as far as food and, you know, what they need to live. But I don't know how long that'll last. You know, I don't remember if there's anything historical after Nehemiah or not. Or is there in the Old Testament before the New Testament? Everything, all the prophets, other prophets go back to the time of the kings, don't they?
Malachi was the last one.
Okay. Anyway, so we...
He was contemporary with Nehemiah. So during this time, basically the time frame...
Now, this is the end of what we know about the history of the Jews in the Old Testament. So anyway, he continued to send prophets. He continued to deliver them from oppressors. He continued to turn back to them and be long-suffering when they rebelled. Give them another chance. He gave them another chance over and over and over.
Except, you know, he did punish idols from 3 months out. They are making an idol and serving idols. You know, and God had just had the plagues on Egypt, throw them out of Egypt with great wonders and powers. And that here they are making a calf, you know, in
well, they brought
them
with them.
They took them from the Egyptians.
And so, you know, they from the get-go are serving idols. And of course, all through the kings, you know, it's idols, especially the divided kingdom, you know, and how God deals with that. And it's like that today. I think it says there that they committed great blasphemies.
Which
know,
verse are
they? 18. You know, but we're not guilty of that today. We don't have
idols.
We don't put anything before God. And here they had the first 3 commandments. You should not have any other gods. You shouldn't have a graven image. Their whole history was a one of idolatrous and not giving God the place he deserves.
It's kind of an eye-opener for us, even though I doubt anybody here has an idol in their home, or ever has or ever will, but what we can make idols out of things. There's plenty of things we can put before God. And it's interesting that there's so much emphasis and so much discussion of idols and the wrongness of it throughout, you know, not just the Old Testament, but the New. It's mentioned quite a bit in the New. So.
You mentioned the contrast. It alludes to it here in this passage about 29 and so forth. When the wickedness in this, they would suffer and they would cry to God. Judges. When you read the Judges, the contrast between the people that God was striving to bring about and make them a great nation, and their attitude toward the God who was doing all of this for them. To me, that is the greatest place to go and read the contrast. And yet God's love, you know, he would let them suffer, and sometimes for many years. But then they would cry, and he would feel sorry, he would be compassionate, and he would
his hands, someone to deliver them.
Well, we're very blessed that he is compassionate, because...
And that's, that should make me more, not so quick to judge and say, that person's going to heaven or hell. That's not my job. You know, I see people that I think, I'm glad I'm not their judge, because if I were their judge, they would, I would not be very merciful. But that, I cannot say that God won't be merciful. I just don't know.
That's hard to think about. I don't want to think about that.
And to what Pat was saying, in verse 30, it says they bear with them for many years and admonish them. Sometimes we do give up. We don't keep admonishing and admonishing and admonishing, you know, them with God's word. Sometimes we write them off, like I've done.
Yeah.
But God kept on, admonishing. There were a couple of times in history, like with Saul, he told Samuel, don't even pray for him, I'm not listening. That's God's department, not mine.
That's true. God, and I heard that being said, but there comes a point. God just says to shake the dust off your feet and go to the next city. That's what he told the apostles. So,
well, he also did, don't throw your pearls before swine.
Yeah, that's true. So we do have to make those judgments, but we need to wrestle, I think, a little bit more with shaking the dust off than just...
Yeah, it shouldn't be like that.
And that doesn't mean that after we have... done that and leave a period of time to at least address them and give them an opportunity. Withdrawing is not the last thing. And that's just a step to try to bring them back, but we continue if we have an opportunity to. They may not like it, they may not want to hear it, it may never do a bit of good, but at least they can't go to God and say, well, they just wrote me off. They never spoke to me for years. And so we need to remember that when we do see someone or have an opportunity to interact with someone or try to make an opportunity to interact, even though we're rebuffed, to continue to try to bring them back.
Okay, because there's 2 minutes left, and this last one, I didn't get very much on there, did y'all? On the righteousness of the fathers? Let's just go ahead and cover that then. I have that Abraham's heart was found faithful in verse 8. What other verse did y'all have? 8, where Abraham's heart was found faithful. I mean, that's one man. That wasn't even a group of people. But where, and Pat, you mentioned verse 2 long ago.
I guess I was thinking, when I did this, I was thinking of the righteousness of the people doing this also.
At this point.
Yeah.
Okay, but what phrases talk about that? Verse 2?
The 25 to 38, where they confess their sins and sin to their fathers and they made a
covenant. Oh, that's a good idea.
They sealed the document. They did something to seal this covenant. So I was thinking of their righteousness.
Well, I did put down verse 38 that they made a sure covenant that was sealed by the leaders and the Levites and the people and the priests. But you're right. I think that's a really good point. I need to write that down.
And in verse 2, again, I had put that they confessed, the descendants of Israel separated themselves from all the foreigners and stood and confessed the sins and the iniquities of their fathers.
Right.
So I took this, and looking back, it may have just meant the fathers who've been wicked. So...
Well, I when I made the lesson, like I said, I don't know what I was thinking about, because when I got ready to work on it this week, that's all I could find.
Okay, well, what it translated to me in my mind, was these people, the righteousness of these people.
Okay, well, I think my point, you're right, but I think my point may have been that there's such a contrast between the good and the bad, and the bad seem to outnumber the good. But, and like I said a while ago, they do this over and over again. How long is this going to last? How long is this covenant going to last?
It doesn't last long because later in the book, they're married.
Yeah. And they've got Tobiah living in the temple.
Yeah.
Verse
25, the second thing, that's talking about Abraham's faithfulness. Verse 25, and this sort of reminds me of the days maybe of the when they went into the land of Joshua and all the days of Joshua, they served the Lord. And it, this says, when they took the land and they ate the fields of fat and reveled in thy goodness. You know, they evidently, I don't know if that's what that
is. What does that tell you about, you know, in the days of Joshua?
It's because he reverenced God.
The leaders.
Yes.
In the days of Moses, what were they doing? They were doing what they needed to be doing, except for that spying incident. They followed Moses. You know, so how important is that to us today, that concept?
And then it begins, and then there grew up a generation who did not know God. So the second part, we were talking about the power and the mercy of God, you know, all throughout here. To me, when you look at the history, the power of the Word of God bringing about a repentance of men is strong in this. To me, look at all, you know, because they did not listen to God. But these people, they stood, they listened to Ezra read the law, and they repented. There is power in the Word of God if we allow it to work in our lives.
You're right, absolutely. We have to allow it to work in our lives, though. If we don't have receptive hearts, then it's not going to happen. Okay, we'll start next week with chapter 10. I need to say this. I know I'm going to be done by the end of December, and I may be done by Thanksgiving. So just for your information, I have two lessons left. I mean, there's some comments I'm going to be making on 11 and 12, but we'll see how it goes. Anybody we need to mention today? Anybody?